Please call the roll.
Saltzman. Udaly.
Here.
Fritz.
Here.
Fish.
Here.
Wheeler.
Still here. First item, 1072.
1072, approve findings to authorize an exemption to the competitive bidding requirements and authorize the use of alternative contract method of construction manager, general contractor, in connection with the Columbia Boulevard Wastewater Treatment Plant Secondary Treatment Expansion Program for an estimated amount of $89 million.
Commissioner Fish.
Thank you, Mayor and colleagues. I want to invite Mike Jordan, the Director of the Bureau of Environmental Services, Larry Palat, Interim Chief Procurement Officer, and Muriel Gaisa-Teufel. Is that close enough?
That is very
thank you.
Good.
Who is the BES Program Manager. And here's a brief introduction of the item before us. Excuse me. The $1.4 billion Big Pipe Project, otherwise known as the Combined Sewer Overflow Program, was completed on time and on budget in 2011, leading to a cleaner Willamette River and Columbia Slough. Stormwater that would have gone to the river and slough is instead being conveyed to the Columbia Boulevard Wastewater Treatment Plant. This is protecting our rivers, but also leading to significantly higher peak flows to the plant. As BES undertakes this secondary expansion program, many individual projects are interconnected and require an integrated design and contracting process to minimize risk, control costs, and manage complex construction sequencing. Here with more information about this ordinance and the treatment plant before us are Mike, Muriel, and Larry. Welcome.
Thank you, Commissioner Fish. Mr. Mayor, members of the council, for the record, my name is Mike Jordan. I'm the director at Bureau of Environmental Services, and I have very brief introductory comments, which hopefully can frame some of the big drivers behind the project. Muriel can take you into the depths of the detail if you wish. And, of course, we are here today primarily for a discussion around the procurement process for this work. As Commissioner Fish mentioned, the city spent about $1.44 billion on the Big Pipe, and we're here today to talk about an overall program that is somewhere in the 10% of that range. I would encourage the council to think about this work as the last phase of the Big Pipe project, because what we did basically is take a whole bunch of stormwater and wastewater that used to go into the river and into the slough, and now it finds its way to the Columbia Boulevard Wastewater Treatment Plant. That presents us with some challenges at a piece of infrastructure that was originally built in 1952 and has had a myriad of projects over the decades, some of which are, quite frankly, out of service or should be. And we are on a confined site, which presents us with a bit of a domino effect issue as we build new facility on that site. So Muriel will go into some of those interrelationships, but generally think about the fact that on a wet day, say December 7th, 2015, we had instantaneous flows at the wastewater treatment plant of 450 million gallons per day. That is the design capacity of the plant. And so we need to do some things to the plant to make sure it can perform with all of that water during wet weather flows now reaching the plant when it didn't used to. Secondly, we've been in discussions now for a number of years with EPA and DEQ regarding the way we treat those storm waters during that wet weather flow. And the bottom line out of those discussions is that we need to expand the secondary treatment capacity at the plant. And what that's going to mean is building some new clarifiers, which take up a fair amount of space. And We have a number of facilities, again, that are going to have to be relocated. There are a number of issues at the plant that have long been operational problems that need to be done. And lastly, we've learned a lot about the operation from others who have had similar problems. So, for instance, you may have heard about Seattle's wastewater plant that was down, quite frankly, for several months because a pipe burst within the tunnels and it filled with sewage, and all of the electronics in the plant were in the tunnels, and it basically shut everything down. Well, guess what? We have a fair number of the electronics in our plant in tunnels where very large pipes run through them. So we're going to be doing a number of projects to increase the reliability of the plant and deal with those issues. And it is a very complex, confined space, and there's a certain domino effect. Lastly, we're under a time frame. In our agreement with EPA, we need to complete these processes by 2024. And it is a lot of work. It is complicated. And having a process where we have designer and construction contractors working together with the operators to be able to optimize the schedule, it's really important for us. So with that,
Mike, let me just add one comment. We would be remiss if we didn't extend an invitation to the mayor and my colleagues at their convenience to give them a tour of the wastewater facility. Todd Lofgren and I took the tour a couple months ago, and it really is a marvel how this plant accommodates so much flow, how it treats the water, and at the end of the process returns it to the river. And the tour is very interesting. You get kind of get insider's view, and you go into the whole system. So any of my colleagues that would like to have that tour at some point, we would be honored to host you. Well,
thank you, Commissioner. We'd be happy to do that.
Well, I took it when my oldest was a fifth grader. Obviously, yes. There's been various changes since then, and quite apart from not having to look after naughty fifth grade boys, would I be able to see any differences?
What year was your fifth grader going? You would see significant changes. The headworks, for one, is a huge change where the initial flow comes into the plant. Huge, probably the newest part of the plant actually is there. But yes, you'd see significant changes.
I think thing she'd see is the fruits of the really terrific collaboration we've had with the neighborhood
exactly.
And our partners. Because as you know, Commissioner Fritz, for a long time there were concerns about odor. And one of the things that is stunning when you're there is how neutral the odor is, and there's a lot of reasons for that. But the technology behind that is fascinating.
Well, if I may just add, my fourth grader is exerting her independence, and I accept this tour. I will hold it over her head as a threat, and we'll see if that doesn't cause some improvement in her behavior. So I think that would be great.
We're happy to be helpful any way we can, Mr.
Terrific.
Mayor.
In all seriousness, I would like to see it. And before even the commissioner mentioned it, I feel remiss that I haven't seen it. So
we'd be happy to
like that.
We'll reach out to the offices. Happy to set it up.
I'd be happy to accept your invitation, and I would like to invite you to BDS for the Life of a Permit tour as a thank you.
That's very collegial of you. Thank you. I take it up. I mean, look, we have a couple of tours in the utilities that are actually just fantastic. One is the wastewater facility, because it's again a marvel of technology, and the people that work there are just incredible. Obviously, the Bull Run watershed, which we had to curtail during the fires, but we urge you to take that on a regular basis and reconnect to that. And we have a few others, but those two in particular should be on your bucket list.
With that, Ms. Mayor, I'd like to pass it over to Muriel to go through the details.
I feel so happy to work in a wastewater treatment plant now. So thank you, Mike. So my name is Muriel Geisa-Teufel. I'm a senior engineer at BES. I work at a treatment plant at Columbia Boulevard. So today, the purpose of the ordinance is really to authorize alternative contracting methods for this program. However, we wanted to take the opportunity to give you more background on the project. It's a large project for BES, and so I'll spend some time on the overview, the need for the project, the schedule, and then the request for the alternative contracting method. So in preparation for the tour, here is an overview map of the Columbia Boulevard Treatment Plant campus. Within the dotted lines there, you can see it's about 74 acres. The main site where we have a lot of the facility, which is south of the Columbia Slough between North Columbia Boulevard, is about 74 acres. We have north of the slough is about 37 acres, which is a biosolids lagoon. We also have a west property that is currently undeveloped. So the plant was built in 1952. It does serve more than 600,000 people. The average daily flow is about 76 million gallons per day. However, as a result of the CSO program, where we've been bringing stormwater flows to the treatment plant, we see peaks up to 450 million gallons per day. So that transfers in different technologies at the plant so that we can accommodate the wide variation in flows. And that's really that makes our plant unique in that respect. So we have what we call a biological treatment process and a chemical treatment process. So the biological one is also referred to as the secondary treatment process. The chemical one is engaged only during peak storm flows. And in perspective, in the few years we've had since the last big pipe was put in service, the chemical treatment treats about 10 to 14% in volume of the flows that come to the plant. So most of the flows still go through that biological treatment process. So this chart is to illustrate the impact of the stormwater, the captured stormwater to the treatment plant. It's a timeline starting in 1995 and ending in 2017. On the y-axis, you see the million gallons per day that would come to the plant. So what it shows here, each blue dot is an average daily flow to the plant. In 2000, when we started the CSO program, we put the Columbia Slough consolidation conduit. That had great impacts to the slough. It didn't impact so much the treatment plants at the wastewater plant, the flows at the wastewater plant, because the volumes were not that great. So you do not see a difference in this case. Yeah. Then the West Pipe came online, and you see an increase already in the volumes of flows from 200 million gallons per day going all the way to 300 million gallons per day. And then finally, when the East Pipe came online, you see a further increase up to the 400 million gallons per day as an average daily flow. So at that point, this is the secondary treatment expansion program is really to deal with the quality of treatment at the plant as opposed to the hydraulic quantities that come to the plant. So we're not increasing the hydraulic capacity of the plant. We're increasing what goes to the secondary treatment process or the proportion that goes to biological treatment. It is mandated by the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality, and we have a mandate to be done by December 2024. The expansion of secondary treatment has been included in planning efforts for many years, since in the 90s, and was also included in the 2016 facilities plan, for which we came to council in October 2015 for a consultant contract. So the expansion, again, provides more biological treatment during a high rain event and added resiliency.
Could you do me a favor?
Yes.
And give me sort of the 101? What's the difference between biological treatment and what is the alternative and how does it work?
Absolutely. So biological treatment is where we use biomass, biology, to treat the pollutants in the wastewater. Right. So we grow biomass based on the food that's in the wastewater. And then once it goes into the aeration basins.
Okay, I'm sorry. Please continue. At least it's afterward.
Once it
too
goes.
Go back to the regular presentation.
Yeah. I'm not talking about headworks, at least.
Oh, I know.
Think of it as a very, very large septic tank, and you dump in a box of Ridex.
Okay.
Same basic principle.
Okay, are those the open ponds we see?
Open ponds would be a different technology, unless you're referring to our lagoons to the north end. So those are settling ponds that are stabilizing. Okay. They also are based on biology to do treatment. So essentially, the biological treatment uses biomass and not chemicals to do treatment. Chemical treatment uses polymers and ferric chloride, so coagulants and flocculants, to really settle the solids, which are stormwater, very dilute, and to settle them really quickly.
Okay, so the biomass basically is environmentally, it's a softer footprint. Is that why we would prefer that?
No, it is a conventional treatment for the treatment plants, and currently EPA is asking that as much flow as possible be sent to biological treatment.
Okay, very good. Okay, yes. That's helpful.
So in the planning efforts since the 90s, we've been looking at expansion of secondary treatment. And back then, the only expansion that was envisioned was on the west property, which is across the railroad tracks, and North Portland Road. That would have required digging big utility tunnels under the railroad track and the road. And in 2009, some cost estimates were done to evaluate the cost of adding two clarifiers on that west property. And in 2017 dollars, that was the equivalent of about $70 million to do that expansion. So that's about the point where we started negotiating with DEQ and saying, wait, we would rather not do that expansion and incur the cost right now. Could we please optimize our current assets for improved performance at the plant? So we entered into a mutual agreement and order in 2011. And said, let's not expand to the west, but instead improve the wet weather clarifiers. This is where we started. We added chemicals, so we added facilities to add chemicals and improve the performance of the peak wet weather flow treatment. And then we also added a lot of automation and gates to our current aeration basins to improve that process and improve its capacity. As part of our agreement, we also had committed to get back to DEQ and tell them about the performance and reevaluate if further expansion was needed. So we looked at some alternatives, five alternatives actually, and the one that provided the best cost-benefit ratio was to put these clarifiers, two additional clarifiers, but within the existing plant footprint that provides a lot of operational benefits as opposed to west to the west property.
So where does the water re-enter the river?
It enters the river. It goes through through two outfalls. We have two large outfalls that go into the Columbia River. So it's about three miles long.
Not into the slough here.
Not into the slough.
It keeps going
farther. It keeps going for about 3 miles.
Ah, okay. Yes. Very good.
So the core of the program then is based on secondary clarifier addition. But as Mike mentioned, there's sort of a domino effect because we're putting facilities within a really tight footprint. Some facilities are adjacent. And at the same time, we have many other assets needed where they need improvements. So we looked at our currently planned projects and looked for projects that were adjacent to the secondary clarifiers or tied from a process or operational standpoint and combine them into this program so that we can get better benefits on constructability, sequencing, and then holistic design approaches. So this picture shows a site plan of the main treatment plant area, and it highlights the project areas that would be touched by this program. So it's a significant portion of the plant. The first area is where the new clarifiers would be put, and you could see here the structures are the existing composters However, they haven't been used as composters for since the late 90s. They had been recommissioned as odor control facilities in the early 2000. And they provide odor control for the solids handling building. So if we were to put clarifiers in that location, we would need to come up with new odor control facilities and also replace the buildings that you see in the background that are providing storage and they are providing staff space. These facilities are quite dated, actually, and so this program is going to alleviate the risk that would be associated with the tall structure with the composter.
So does the financial figure that you gave us right at the beginning, does that include new facilities?
Yes, the project cost estimate includes all the new facilities.
Okay, and if I'm understanding you correctly, there is no part of the process that is undone or doesn't happen as a result of this construction. It sounds like you're going to go ahead and create an alternative for your, I guess you describe it as odor control.
Yes.
So you will have to also put something in place to replace that prior to actually taking this offline so you can rebuild this as a clarifier.
Absolutely.
Is that right?
That is correct.
Is that the right sequence here? Okay.
Yes.
Okay,
and
good.
Thank you. The benefit here is that the odor control system was going to have to be relooked at as part of our solids handling building improvements, which I'll present in a few slides.
And do you, in your slides, do you have a picture of what a clarifier actually looks like? Because I'm not sure I understand that.
Yes, it is. If you look at the site plan, you see the squares.
Yes.
So those are the existing clarifiers. So they're a low-profile structure that are essentially full of water.
Okay.
So you see the tall composter structure then will be replaced by a low-profile structure, which from the public trail standpoint is going to be a benefit.
Okay, and so the existing clarifiers remain in place. You're just adding
yes,
the capacity.
Absolutely.
Okay,
yeah.
Thank you.
So as part of the project, then we would replace the storage building and the staff building, and we have an area that's to the east. Adjacent to the public trail where we would put new buildings. And there it's about 15,000 square feet of storage and 5,000 square feet of staff space. As part of the program, when we put large clarifiers, they need to connect to the existing process units. So there's big pipes conveying water to between the tanks. These pipes will run in what we call the utility tunnels. And the picture here you see is the existing tunnel. So you can see it's a pretty constricted area, where constructability is going to be an issue. And it would be beneficial to have a contractor on board to help us develop the better approach for it. The project will then include the return activated sludge piping. That was a project that was currently in the CIP project, and we've incorporated in this program for added benefits.
What is liquor piping?
The mixed liquor is the liquid that comes from the aeration basins and goes into the clarifiers.
Thank you.
Not as good as it sounds.
It's those secret cocktail parties, Commissioner. What are they about?
I knew it.
I don't want to go.
As part of the work, again in the tunnels, we need to make connections to the new clarifiers, and these two circular facilities are actually boilers. They date from the original secondary expansion from the 70s. They run on biogas, and biogas now is a much more valuable resource for us where we want to produce compressed natural gas and not necessarily building heat. These boilers are also in the way for us to connect with the new clarifiers. So the project includes a replacement of the steam boilers.
I'm sorry, so how will they be powered then?
That hasn't been determined yet. That would be part of a pre-design evaluation, but it could be natural gas or other means.
Very good. Thank you. Yeah.
As part of the tunnel work, the electrical resiliency should be improved. We have motor control centers and transformers that are currently in the tunnel. And as Mike highlighted, there's a flooding risk in a tunnel. These MCCs are also obsolete. And as part of the project, we will need new electrical equipment. So it makes sense to combine the two needs and move the MCCs out of the tunnel and eliminate that flooding risk.
This particular slide is my least favorite part of the trip. There's a lot. I won't go into the details, but there's a lot of funky stuff going on.
You can see in the picture some plastic sheeting over those large electrical control boxes.
Oh, and
that's because we have leaks. And big electrical equipment with leaks just don't mix very well. So.
Correct. Now we're going to replace both. We're repairing the leaks, and we're going to replace the pipe with a new one and take those MCCs out of the tunnel. So this one shows the biosolids processing building and a biosolids processing area. It includes activities that are called thickening and dewatering. It's associated with the biosolids that are eventually sent out to Eastern Oregon for a land application. The building is the source of the odors that are treated in the composter area. As part of the project, we will look at new technologies in the building so that we can be more efficient with the odor control system and perhaps reduce the size of the odor control system. The building itself is not code compliant, and for example, it has leaking skylights. It needs a seismic retrofit, so this aspect of the project includes also a large building retrofit. And then finally, the biosolids hoppers, which is the place where we put the biosolids before they're loaded up onto trucks, they're currently in the middle of the construction area, so we will look at moving them closer to the building and make that whole process more efficient. The aeration basins, well, we have done a lot of work in them as part of our secondary process improvement that was part of our MAO. We were on a really tight timeline to make these process improvements. And when we did them, we realized that there were some structural issues that we could deal with in the basin. So it's essentially crack repairs and spall repairs on a vertical walls. The reason it's included in the program is that the processes are connected with the secondary clarifiers, and we can coordinate the outage requests. The project is also on the same timeline as the program, and so we've combined this in the program.
Muriel, when these basins are fully activated, mm-hmm. there's a lot of things going on there. How do you describe the microorganisms that are doing their business in these basins?
How do I describe the microorganisms? That is
Am I right?
That the microorganisms, yes, they are absolutely in these basins. We have multiple zones in the basins, so that's what we've added in the past. We've added zones so that we could, the first zones are anaerobic, which means they don't have any oxygen, and we grow a specific kind of organisms in that case that will help. They kind of overcompete the others, and then they help settling in those secondary clarifiers. And then we move on to aerobic microorganisms, or they're aerated in the other parts of the process. And these are completely mixed, so we completely mix these tanks. And the microbiology then settles in the secondary clarifiers, and that's where we get those biosolids.
Interesting.
So how long would this whole process take from when the substance arrives at the plant until when it goes into the river?
That's a great question. I believe it depends on the flow rates and how fast they go, but I thought I might have to go back on that, but I thought it was about 2 to 3 hours that we had estimated.
Enough of an answer. I didn't know whether it was hours, days, weeks, months.
It's not days, but the biomass we do keep in the system. So the biomass is, that's why we have this, what we call return activated sludge. And so we return the biomass because we grow it. Mm-hmm. And this is actually the reason why we have a peak wet weather flow treatment process. Because if all the wastewater at peak flow was going through the biological system, it would wash out everything and we would lose our process. So we actually don't want everything to go through biological treatment.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And then finally, the last piece of the program is storage buildings that are on the southwest part of the campus. These storage buildings are used for contractor equipment storage when we do construction, also for plant maintenance storage. We are going to upgrade them or maintain them. One's going to be demoed, actually, and then the other one is just going to be a re-siding job and maybe adding some lighting to it. So the program budget... it's a planning level, so we haven't started the design. At this point, the construction cost estimate is $89 million. The total program cost estimate is $146 million. So again, this is a low level of confidence. It's a planning level. And for this ordinance today, we're focusing on the $89 million because this is related to the exemption to go with an alternative contracting method.
Okay. So the reason to get to the CMGC process is based partially on the December 24, 2024 completion thought process, which under a standard low bid, design, then bid, then build type process would be not achievable at all. The CMGC process gives you more flexibility in designing the schedule. You can sequence construction. You can be doing more things at any one time because you're operating under kind of an umbrella type of operation. There are some very complex sequencing and maintenance operations here. The early field investigations that we can do as part of the whole process will reduce the construction risk. And when you're talking about $89 million worth of construction, there's always a significant risk, and anything we can do to reduce that risk is probably very, very much appreciated by the ratepayers. Early cost estimating and continuous flow of cost estimating increases your certainty so that when we actually say this is what we believe it's going to cost, then that's what it's going to cost. There, as council is aware, there are a series of mandated findings that are required in order to get us to this process. All of those findings have been vetted through procurement services and, more importantly, the city attorney's office, and all items are passed. The process allows for qualification-based selection as opposed to simply the idea behind low bid. Sometimes you do a low bid, you don't always get the best vendor. We have more flexibility here with achieving our certified firm type goals. As we move forward in different sections of the GMP, we're able to do more negotiating and more working with vendors, you know, and our primary selected vendor.
What's the GMP?
Guaranteed maximum price.
Thank you.
And then, as stipulated in part of the findings, the thought process is that this whole thing is likely to reduce the overall project cost and increase value. The contractor constructability review, value engineering assistance, all those things kind of take place as you move forward, which greatly encourages enhances your ability to make adjustments and changes and gain flexibility. We also have the ability in this to, as we go forward, we continually negotiate and work with vendors relative to participation by small minority firms.
Thank you. So our next steps with the program is on September 30th, we need to send a notice to DEQ to state that we have begun implementing the work. We also have a professional expert and technical services procurement, so this is for the design consultant selection. And then we've also, since this is a large program, we are in the selection process for program support consultant to assist us in managing a large program. So, and then with the exemption approved, CMGC procurement would follow.
Just to be clear, this construction contract would not really begin for over a year. Is that correct, Mike?
Almost two, I think.
Almost 2 years. Yeah. So we're talking about a lot of preparatory work
yep.
here.
A lot of design.
And so we're going to hand deliver this notice of DEQ on Saturday, September 30th?
The
I only know that because it's my birthday. I'm just I'm happy to do it myself. I hand deliver it.
The begin implementing the work refers to we have money set aside.
Yep.
We have
no, I'm kidding.
Budget and schedule, and that is what we're going to state to
DEQ. They may even give us till Monday. I'm just
Also, with this program, we understand that it's a large amount of money, and we expect a lot of reporting, so we are committed to providing updates to the Portland Utility Board as requested and as the project, the program progresses. Similarly, with the Citizens Advisory Committee, we have a longstanding Citizens Advisory Committee at the Columbia plant. We regularly update them, and we'll continue to do so. The Citizens Utility Board, we will also provide updates as requested, and obviously City Council as needed per requirements and also as requested. So with that, we are requesting an exemption to the low bid contracting alternative in favor of a CMGC method for this program.
Very good. Colleagues, any questions? Is there public testimony on this issue, Susan?
We have three signed up.
Very good.
Ramfi Villatoro, please come up. Kelly Haynes and Janice Thompson.
Very good. 3 minutes each. Name for the record, please. And if you are a lobbyist, let us know so, although I see that none of you are.
Hi, I'm Kelly Haynes, here representing the Metropolitan Alliance for Workforce Equity today, which is a historic partnership between the carpenters, operating engineers, laborers, other unions, construction contractors, pre-apprenticeship programs, and community-based organizations. I want to say today thank you for considering an alternative contracting method for the Columbia Boulevard Wastewater Treatment Plant Secondary Expansion Program. I think this model helps ensure mechanisms that support increased positive stewardship of public resources, including broad community benefits in the workforce and contracting opportunities that can be made available during the construction phase. We applaud this as an important first step, but also want to encourage leadership to replicate a proven local model and embrace the use of a community benefits agreement on this project. The CBA pilots came in ahead of time and under budget. They exceeded nearly all diversity goals and targets. There was true community oversight and investment in community capacity building. There was transparency of data reporting and accountability of the contractors and subcontractors. The city already has an effective tool in the CBA, which the city could immediately use to align project activities with the insight and resources of community stakeholders. The CBA was approved by City Council in September of 2012 with Resolution 36954 and has achieved excellent results to date. By applying the CBA to this project, the city could ensure the project is structured to enhance city-community partnerships and realize tangible community benefits for all Portlanders. We are concerned that the city could be missing an opportunity to set a high standard in partnership with the community. And so we recommend that you seriously consider applying a CBA to the CBWTP. Thank
you. So, Kelly, thank you for your testimony. And when this panel is finished, I'm going to bring Mike Jordan back, and we're going to discuss that.
Great.
So we're prepared to put some things on the table and then engage my colleagues.
Thank you.
So thank you.
Commissioner Daly?
No.
Okay. Good afternoon.
Hi. Mayor, members of the Commission, my name is Rainfis Gentino-Viatoro, and I am the Associate Director with Professional Business Development Group which is a trade association that represents 30 to 40 minority and women-owned construction firms, as well as professional services in the Portland metro region. Our primary purpose is to improve the business conditions in construction, to increase the utilization of MWESB firms. We have members who are general contractors, subcontractors, folks who are union firms, non-union firms. We have partners who do everything from excavation, electrical, landscaping, to like sheet metal. We have partners, sponsors. Prosper Portland is one of our partners slash sponsors, TriMet as well. And so I'm here today to testify in support of the alternative contracting method for the Columbia Boulevard waste treatment plant, as well as the CMGC model. We have members who have worked on past projects like that. I've been told that this is something that they enjoy working on projects like that. I do want to have, I guess, a couple requests and questions. I guess one in terms of the MWESB utilization, as it's a stated public benefit, better clarity around what the pre-plan is or the plan for the to meet that. What exactly are the utilization goals and what's the plan to meet those goals? And if it's possible to receive that pre-construction. And then, I guess, again, for clarity around whether it's going to be a CBA or whatever format it will be to deliver the outcomes for the project. But ultimately, I'm here to say we have members who are interested in being utilized for projects, whether it's this project or other city projects. They have the capability to do this work, and we're willing to work with the city to meet its goals. So thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. Good afternoon.
Hi, Janice Thompson, Oregon Citizens Utility Board, or CUB. So I've been kind of monitoring this kind of collection of activities for a while, so kind of anticipated this coming before you. And that's linked to kind of ongoing review of CIP plans, and you know, I did my own tour out to the Columbia Boulevard wastewater treatment plant back in either 2014, 2015, and I do highly recommend it. So this is all based on the facilities plan update. You know, there was definitely a previous plan, which is why there are some elements in the totality of this effort that have been in kind of in previous CIPs, and some elements are kind of going to be new entries in the CIP plan process. The bottom line is all these pieces add up to a pretty big chunk of money, which is why I've been trying to track it all along. The primary driver is the regulatory requirements, so these are not discretionary efforts. Somebody who was very helpful, who's not here today, that I wanted to mention is Matt Kriblitz. I checked in with him several times related to the permitting process, because how that worked out was obviously going to determine what was built. And definitely the goal of the permitting agencies is meeting the environmental protection requirements, and quite frankly, cost is not, you know, to be part of that review, and that's appropriate. However, whenever the environmental goals can be met with less expensive projects, there's kind of a double win for ratepayers. And I see that double win here. There was a reference to this plan not having to go underneath, involve expansion west of Portland Boulevard that required expensive tunneling. In general, it's been described to me, and I think it's accurate, that this option is the second lowest cost but provided the best overall reliability and resiliency benefits. And that's, you know, CUB cares about those costs, but it's not all about just the lowest cost. You really want to hit that sweet spot. More recently, I was out and kind of for a briefing just on this topic. So thanks for Muriel and Paul and Scott for that. Two quick notes. One is some buildings will be replaced as part of kind of rejiggering and kind of using this, the, you know, by virtue of not moving across Burton Boulevard, the site is requires some rejiggering. So some buildings are going to be replaced. Buildings are always are also kind of a red flag. So I actually made a point of asking to go look at a couple of the small buildings that are involved in this that I hadn't, because they were really small. I hadn't seen them earlier on. And I just want to assure you that they are definitely kind of appropriate candidates for replacement. So it's not... and finally, the other question I asked is that the facilities plan update does call for additional work. So there could be subsequent projects that come before you, but it seems pretty clear that the scope of the future work won't be nearly at the level before you today. So it's kind of like a, there may be more, but there's not like anything at this scale coming. Those items may include more discretionary options, and we'll just be monitoring those. But just wanted to give you that update.
Helpful. Thank you very much.
Thank you. A question?
Commissioner Fritz.
Actually, a question for the first two testifiers. Commissioner Udaly and I serve on the Metro Policy Advisory Committee, and they last session had a briefing on the new kind of all-inclusive. You're nodding, and that was my question. Have you been included in that? Something that was championed by former Chief Administrative Officer Fred Miller, pointing out that governments across the region do have lots of projects that aren't necessarily all at the same time, and that could help train and then use workers. Could you just let me know, have you been involved in that? And if not, what you'd like us to do on that?
Work Systems is leading on a metro construction workforce market study, so we're managing that project to develop sort of the supply and demand in the region of, so we've interviewed all the major public agencies around their projects, over $15 million over the next 3 to 5 years, and then we're also working with state economists and the Bureau of Labor and Industry to develop, figuring out what is the supply of apprentices and women and people of color. So I think that study is meant to help inform this regional conversation to help develop more standardization and coordination amongst the different agencies in the region and our respective goals. And we also helped host Seattle people last Monday. So we brought down Sound Transit, King County, and the city of Seattle to talk about the work that they've done up there to try to standardize in their region. So a lot of people from the city of Portland were there, and I hope that's a helpful way to at least keep that conversation going and learn from other parts of the country.
Yeah, I thought it was quite exciting, and maybe you have something else to add, but I was wondering, do you think that could lead to a regional system of community benefits agreements that would have basically a structure that everybody would agree to? Is that something that you can see coming out of that?
I think that's everyone's hope, so that we can be more efficient and coordinated, and I know contractors would like that too. And I know in Seattle they do try to do that, but everyone has their own legal departments too, so they have to sort of respect each other's differences but also try to come together and coordinate where they can.
Well, thank you. And Ramfisa, are you and your organization involved in that?
We are not. A professional business development group is not. We would love to be involved. I mean, we have a really strong interest, obviously, on the contracting side when it comes to community benefit agreements. But I think in terms of the workforce, our main premise is it's really important to have good workforce diversity in the apprenticeship level, journey level, folks fitting in like to supervisor engineering roles to ultimately becoming owners themselves. And I think if the city and other regional partners want to push our DMW ESB goals, we should be really thoughtful around workforce diversity as well and training. So
we actually have an impact meeting tonight. So if you'd like to give Sue your card, I'll make sure it gets to the people at Metro.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you both. Mayor, let's bring our panel back for a second. Mike Jordan, all three of you, if you could come back for a second. So, colleagues, let me tee it up this way. A handful of the biggest capital construction projects that the city is going to undertake over the next decade fall within the purview of the utilities, or are related to the work of the utilities. So I'm thinking Superfund. I'm thinking the Water Bureau's filtration long-term planning, Columbia Wastewater Facility. There's other projects in the pipeline. So we obviously at BES and the Water Bureau are deeply committed to the community benefits model. Mayor, you are engaged in a process to update that approach with an eye to improving equity and inclusion efforts and contracting. This particular project doesn't, the construction doesn't start in 2 years. So my operating assumption is that the council's going to update, and I get lost in all the acronyms, but we're going to have a CBA, a CBP, a call it whatever you want. We're going to come together around a plan that has broad support. And then that plan would apply to the large construction projects within the utility. So I guess the question I have is, do we have a sense of when that's going to be brought? I was looking at the notable calendar, and I couldn't find it. But are we months away from having something come back to council?
We are within it won't be months. It will be weeks.
Weeks.
And I just want to remind council, though we haven't taken a vote, there is an amendment on the table that has an exemption threshold of $25
million,
which would put this back, assuming if that gets approved by the council, it would put this back in the arena of a CBA.
Right. So the council has to act on that and has to create clear guidance as to how we're going to do the contracting. And then the utilities, which, as I said, have some of the largest contracts in the pipeline, need to then sit down and develop, consistent with the will of the council, an approach for how we go forward. And the goal is to take the community benefits model and boost the numbers that the council expects us to get. So I think that's just responsive. But I just want to be clear. Today we're only asking for an exemption from the CMGs. You know, we're asking you to approve the finding. We're not asking you to do anything today. It's a first reading. But we are proposing that we try this alternative contracting approach, which has broad support from the very people that want to see us also move forward on a community benefits agreement model. So that's a two-stage process, and we're awaiting council final action on the matter that you're leading, Mayor. I hope that clears it up. Mike, did I state that correctly?
I think you did, Commissioner. Thank you. Okay.
Colleagues, any more questions before we move it? All right. Thank you very much. Excellent presentation. This is a first reading of
very,
an emergency
very well done.
Ordinance. It moves to
mind-numbingly
reading.
Complicated, but well done.
All right. Susan, could you read the next three items?